you to remember something. Now, I'll give you a hint what I'd like you to remember so as to not make it too difficult. But here we are. Some of us in young bodies, some of us in old bodies, some of us in so many different kinds of bodies, but what gives life to the body, of course, is the soul, the person. Now, here we are at this new Nandagram retreat, and we are on a journey, so to speak. A journey meaning we're following, we have differing degrees of desires to go back home, back to Godhead, to attain the lotus feet of Krishna, to be devotees. It's really a journey. And the journey can take a long time, it can take a short time, it depends on what stage of the journey we are, on which we are. But in this life, what I'd like you to remember is where did it strike you that there's more to life than just trying to succeed and enjoy and accumulate financial security and wealth and power? What was the realization? What was the thought, the sort of the spark that came to your heart that made you think in that way? Now, think about that now. For those of us in younger bodies, it may have happened in a previous life. And also, it probably for everyone, it happened to some degree in a previous life. But what was it? What thought? Or what realization? What was the spark, the idea? Just think for a few moments. And then if someone wants to raise their hand and say what it was for them. Yes, and it forced you to some degree of suffering. The attempt for enjoyment brought the exact opposite of what you wanted, and that led you to think that there's something more, and you started looking, and somehow, then what happened? Very quickly. So what was the realization? I'm interested in the realization, the spark, that material life means suffering. There's more to life than this. Thank you. Anyone else like to say? Yes. Yes. So was there a frustration for you? And then what happened? Yes. Yes. And then when did it turn to the positive? Okay. And what? Someone gave it to you and you kept it before you read it. Yes. Okay, what was it in there? What realization sparked you to take to Krishna consciousness? Yes. Yes. Yes, there's an ego one over there. Yes. Oh, yes. Hare Krishna. Spirit and matter. Yeah. Yes, that was what did you in the Vasanam. Melbourne Mahaprasad Mandir. But what was the specific realization that you had that sort of was a spark that is leading you on your path? Well, you have that question is really nice. The questions that you are asking. What is the realization that sparks your journey? And Jagannath Mahaprabhu said that there's a place that's eternal, and there's no misery. I want that place to go there. Since he's a high achiever. Might as well achieve the highest thing. So what was the spark that pushes your journey? Yes. What would you like to know about Krishna? Yes. 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 Now, what I'm this specifically is the topic that Mahaprabhu is going to teach us by his own action about this journey. And the journey can be very long, and it can be very short too. Usually when it's very short, it means you've already traveled a long distance already at a previous time. But I would like to, before we start talking about Mahaprabhu, I would like to talk something about someone who we owe a lot to, and his name is Narada Muni. Now, Narada Muni is described in the sixth chapter of the first canto. His life and his journey is described. And interestingly enough, his journey began with very unfortunate circumstances. And this is one of the mysteries of spiritual life, and one of the arts of spiritual life is how to turn an unfortunate circumstance into a greatly fortunate circumstance, because we all like only fortunate circumstances, and unfortunately, so many unfortunate circumstances come, but those unfortunate circumstances sometimes are more fortunate than the fortunate circumstances, if you know what I mean. They can be, but they don't have to be either. So Narada Muni was impoverished, didn't have a father. His mother was just a servant lady. But by the fortune of his circumstance and also his previous life, he came in touch with some Bhakti Vedantas who taught him before they left. He served them. He was very innocent. He was just about the age of, probably younger than you. He was just 4 years old, like the age of our, where are the four-year-olds? Usually you hear them before you see them. Yes, no. But just so young, and he was serving. He had a serving mood, and he wasn't interested, amazingly enough, in playing. But yet he was impoverished, didn't have a father. But he heard, he served the Bhaktivedantas. He took some Mahaprasadam remnants one time with their permission. And what happened was the taste that they had became transferred to him. Because we are all driven by a taste. We want. What drives the machine of the material, of the person, every person? Taste. I want this. I want to relish that flavor. I want to know what that is. So Narada Muni acquired the same taste as the Bhaktivedantas. And then the most unfortunate thing that can possibly happen to a young boy occurred to him. His protectress, his mother, was bitten by a snake when she went out to milk the cow, and then she died and he was alone. No one to take care of him. But he had a taste, and that taste was driving him. And that taste was for his relationship with Krishna to develop. He wanted to love Krishna. So he began wandering. He took advantage of this most unfortunate circumstance that he didn't have any obligations to anyone in any place. And he just began wandering. And when one wanders, as Narada Muni did, one learns about life, sees everything. He sees the good. He sees the bad. He sees the cities. He sees the countryside. He sees the peaceful places. He sees kind people. He sees cruel people. And things happen to him. And he experiences them. And he keeps wandering, just taking it all in, becoming detached, moving on. And then he is somewhat more grown up, and he began to meditate. Beneath a tree in a very secluded and quiet forest, and suddenly, as he was trying to meditate on Krishna, Krishna, in his heart, appeared to him. He had sakshat darshan. We try to focus our mind on chanting. We try to look at the deities and see Krishna and the deities. And we're attempting. And when Narada Muni tried to do this by meditation, Krishna actually fully manifests in his heart. It's like when you're chanting the holy names and you're trying to capture Krishna in your consciousness, or looking at the deities and praying to Krishna. Suddenly, Krishna fully manifests in your consciousness. How extraordinary. Now, Narada Muni describes this. Śrīla Vyāsadeva, and what it's like. what it was like for him to see the Lord. Now, Prabhupada explains in the purport, this is very hard to describe. I mean, how do you describe the taste of a mango? You know that story that Prabhupada told, that how he was trying to describe, someone was trying to describe the taste of a mango, of a jackfruit katal in Bengali. I don't know what it is in katal in Bengali, jackfruit. So someone was trying to describe the unique taste of a jackfruit to someone else, and he was trying to think of what it was like. And he said, it's like drinking sugarcane juice through a Muslim's beard. Well, for any of you, more of you have probably drank or tasted jackfruit than drank sugarcane juice through a Muslim's beard. But in any case, how are you going to describe a completely subjective experience? You can say, well, it's sort of like this, and it's sort of like that, and it's sort of like that. This is how Narada Muni describes when the Lord, Krishna, appeared in his heart. He says, I was overpowered by feelings of happiness. Every part of my body became separately enlivened. All the senses, every part was touching Krishna. And he became absorbed in an ocean of ecstasy. I could not see both myself and the Lord. In other words, his consciousness was completely absorbed. And there was no difference between him and the Lord, not merging in that sense, but merging in another sense. He became overwhelmed by the experience. And then, in a moment, after being in this ocean of ecstasy, in a moment, the Lord disappeared from his heart. He stood up. His meditation broke. He stood up, completely disturbed, because he had the most valuable thing. He was having the most valuable experience. And then it was gone. He was distraught. And then, again and again, he attempted to capture the Lord again in his heart. And he was unable. Because our part is the attempt, but our attempt is necessary, but not sufficient to get the result. He tried again and again and again and again. Just like sometimes when we're chanting japa or kirtan or seeing the deities, it happens, you know, we're suddenly, we're with the Lord more deeply than usual. And then we think, oh, it was so simple. And then we just try to do it again in the same way. All I did was stand in front of Radha Balava. But then it doesn't happen again. Because it really happens by his mercy. So Narada Muni tried again and again and again. He could not see him anymore. He was thus dissatisfied. But then he heard a voice. And the Lord spoke to him in this completely secluded place and said, Hantasmin Janmanahi Bhava Namam Drashtum Ivarati. I regret to say that in this life you will never see me again. Ivapakwa Kushayanam Tudarshtoham Kuyogana. Because you are not paka, you are not ripe, you are immature in your devotion. And you have impurities in your heart still. I regret to say that you won't see me again. Now he's just had the most wonderful of possible experiences and it's gone, And he's just been told by the Lord himself, you're not going to see me again in your life because it happened by my grace, by my mercy, by my desire, not by your endeavor. Now listen to what he says. He didn't stop speaking. Krishna didn't stop speaking. But listen to what he said. You have only once seen my person. And this is just to increase your desire for me. Because the more you hanker for me, the more you will be free from all material desires. So there's a kind of person who they get some experience, and then they can't get it at their demand, like Narada Muni couldn't get it at his demand, like we all probably experience that when we chant, sometimes Krishna is more there than at other times, and when we see the deities, Krishna is more there than at other times. And sometimes, not like Narada Muni acted, but sometimes, instead of increasing the hankering in the heart, I want this, I need this. There is nothing else of value. Sometimes we turn away and go in the opposite direction and turn towards the land of shadows as opposed to the land of substance. Because I cannot get what I want in the land of substance, I turn to shadows. Of course, this is just a stage of immaturity. But look, or listen rather, to what the Lord told Narada Muni. You have seen my person only once, and this is just to increase your desire for me. Because you are immature in your realization, and immature in your realization really means immature in your desiring. That plus you have other things in the heart. You have other desires, which we call impurity. But if you increase your desire and it bursts into flame, and that's all you want, and you want it intensely, and if you become completely attracted to the form, to the qualities, to the name, to the pastime of that all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead, that fire of desire will burn the impurities that infect our heart in our journey. And on the other hand, if there's no desire, and we just a sort of following the process and I'm a member of this religion or that religion, and because that's why I go every Sunday to the Sunday feast, and also I like the prasadam, which is, it's good, because it's a stage, but it is hardly, it's a stage of what? It's a stage of the journey, but it's not close to home yet. Because the more you desire me, and this is why the Lord showed himself to Narada Muni one time and one time only, the more you desire me, because the more you hanker for me, the more you will be freed from material desires, and the more I will come to you by my mercy. And then he said, other wonderful things. And how did Narada Muni react to this? He tells him, first of all, the Lord told Narada Muni that if you perfect your desire, in other words, if your desire to be with me, to love me, to serve me, is flaming continuously, then when you leave this world, there will be no pause between your being with me in the spiritual world. Because we're here in the material world because we want to be here. We want to taste, experience the material tastes that are available here. In Delhi, they have Narula's ice cream with so many flavors. Good shopkeeping, because then, I've experienced this flavor, but I've not experienced that flavor. And then I come back to experience that flavor, and that flavor, and that flavor, and that flavor. Before I finally understand that none of those flavors touch me, the soul, the person, who I am. And none of them bring the satisfaction that I'm longing for. And we, Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Ji, we travel throughout the material world seeking to satisfy those different desires, those flavors that we want to taste. But when the flame of our desire to be with Krishna are burning strongly, then it burns to ashes everything else. So therefore, Sri Ramananda Roy, on behalf of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, told Mahaprabhu, Krishna Bhakti Rasita Bhavato Mati Kriyatam Yadi Kuti Chalabhyate Tatra Loyam Apimulam Ekalam Janmakoti Sukriteya Na Labhyate. That there is one price, there is one and one only price that being with Krishna or tasting Krishna Bhakti Rasita Bhavata, the Bhava of Krishna Bhakti Rasa. There is only one price, and that is, and this phrase, Krishna Bhakti Rasa, is what Prabhupada translated into Krishna consciousness. So there is one price for tasting Krishna consciousness, and that is Tatra Loyam. What does Loyam mean? Greed, intense desire, flaming desire. I want it. And this, to develop, to increase our desire to love Krishna is, in one sense, the essence of the journey, the search for Krishna. It's to increase our desire to be with Him. And then if we do that, automatically all the lesser desires, the material desires, the desires born of the shadows, they will disappear. They will be burnt to ash. And then sure enough, this is how Narada Muni reacted to this. He began, when the voice stopped speaking, he offered his obeisances and he bowed his head and he was feeling so grateful that he had that taste even once is the most fortunate thing. Sometimes children, if you ever want to torture a child, just bring them into Toys R Us store. Because then his desires increase unlimitedly. and his capacity and his parents' ability to give him, fulfill all his desires are very small. Have you ever been in a Torah store? Very lucky. Because it's full of toys. There's toys and toys. And when we see the toys, we think, oh, I could enjoy that, and I could enjoy that, and I could enjoy that, I could enjoy that, I could enjoy that, I could enjoy that. And the mind goes, goes crazy thinking of all the possibilities of enjoyment when actually can't enjoy it. It's torture for the mind. So Narada Muni was grateful that he had gotten that taste by the Lord's mercy, and it was alive in his heart. Of course, he was very advanced and he saw the Lord, but it was alive in his heart. And now all he had to do was like a spark. He had to tend it carefully so that it would flame. So this is what he did. Thus I began chanting the holy name and fame of the Lord by repeated recitation, ignoring all the formalities of the material world. Such chanting and remembering of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are benedictory. They give, bestow all blessings. And so doing, just chanting and hearing and thinking about Krishna, I traveled all over the earth, fully satisfied, humble, and unenvious. Put those three together. Fully satisfied. Why was he fully satisfied? Because he was actually experiencing in his chanting and hearing, he was actually experiencing Krishna. As much as Krishna was allowing him to experience him, Krishna wasn't in front of him as he was that one time, but he was experiencing Krishna, and therefore he was fully satisfied. And therefore, also, because he was continuously chanting, he was humble. Because in relationship with Krishna, it is only when we're not in relationship with Krishna, we become proud. Pride is a symptom of turning our back on to Krishna. This will come up possibly in the third class. Pride, the experience of pride, means we're not in relationship with Krishna. We're in relationship with our own minds, our own false ego. Thinking, oh, I'm so wonderful. Well, am I wonderful? What am I doing that's wonderful again? What is it that I'm doing that's so wonderful? Here I am speaking, but is that speaking ability coming from me and my wonderfulness? I don't even know how it works. The blood is just coursing through my body because of how wonderful I am, and the breaths go in and out of the lungs because of me and my gloriousness. And the germs are being fought off, and my eyes and my food digesting and the ears hearing. It's all because of me and how well I've engineered this body, and my body particularly. No, somehow or another, I play my little part in it. But if Krishna withdraws the support system, how long will I last? How long will my wonder be wondrous? I wonder about that. It wouldn't be very long. So what am I doing? So it is only illusion. It is illusion and illusion only that causes my pride. It means I'm not in relationship with Krishna. I'm in relationship with false ego, my own mind. My own overestimated sense of self-importance. when in fact there are so many human beings who've come and done their little bit in the world and then passed on, and then no one even knows about them. 10 minutes later, an hour later, 10 hours later. One time we were in Vrindavan, there was one dear devotee who was passing away. And when he had actually left, he was very fortunate to have passed away in Vrindavan. And then when I was leaving her house, I was walking down the, it was in January, so it was quite cold in Vrindavan, just walking down the road back where I was staying, I saw there was a little puppy who I had been seeing playing with his mother and brother puppies so many times in the last week that I'd walked up that street many times, and he was lying dead also. And I see that living entities are just, I mean, she left, puppy left, and how many left that have no consciousness of, awareness of? And yet I'm proud? Means not in touch with reality. So, Narada Muni, this is the result of actually being in relationship with Krishna by chanting and hearing about him constantly, based on a desire, because he had a deep hankering. You can't mechanically do it. From now on, because this is, I'd like to find out what the experience is like. From now on, I'm going to always chant. No, his desire had increased. So therefore, the chanting constantly was completely natural to him. He was that qualified. And therefore, in relationship with Krishna, he was satisfied, he was humble, and he was non-envious. Why was he non-envious? Yeah, because, well, we just look at the other two words, because he was satisfied and humble. It's also, when you're not humble, you become envious of what someone else has. Why should he have it? I should have it. That's not humble, is it? No, it isn't the case. Maybe we can open the some windows, because either that, or we should take a break. It'll take a little rest for a few minutes. Maybe open up windows on that side and that side and that one too. Unless it's going to come on your head. And then Narada Muni did this, and then one day, as he was wandering and chanting in a satisfied, unenvious, and humble way, he died. Just like that. And just like that, as instantaneous as lightning and the flash of illumination, he attained his spiritual body, just like that. Because he had developed it internally. So when the external dropped, the internal was mature already. He was on the journey. And this same journey is the journey that Mahaprabhu came to teach by his own example. Now, the teacher is going to act as if he's a student to tell the other students, to show them just what they should do. Now, before we start reading from the exact point that I would like to read from, I would like to tell a little, of course we all know from the past times of Mahaprabhu, but when he was a young boy, he was very, 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 yes, He was the most naughty. If we took the naughtiness, if we milked all the naughtiness from all the young boys in this room, we could not even get one drop of Mahaprabhu's naughtiness. Because he was all naughty. And then, after that, he became involved in studying. And if we milked all the studiousness of all the young boys and older young boys in this room, we could not get even a drop of the great studiousness of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he became the greatest scholar in Navadvipa. And Navadvipa was a land of scholars. And he was the greatest scholar. And even when he was a young boy, the older scholars were afraid of challenging him. He would make a statement and then challenge anyone to break it, to disprove it. And then they couldn't disprove it. And then he would disprove it. And then he would challenge anyone to break his rebuttal or disapproval, if there is. We'll make up a new word for it. And then no one could challenge that. And then he would reestablish his original one. And then he would go back and forth and back and forth. And everyone feared him. All the scholars feared him. And he would wander around Navadvipa challenging everyone. And even the devotees feared him because he would make fun of them. He would tease them. He would argue with them. And they would see Mahaprabhu coming and they would go to the opposite side of the road and walk. And when he was 16, he had his own school already. He was teaching. Had his own students. He wasn't acting like a person who had the spark of love for Krishna in his heart. He was acting as a mundane, materialistic scholar. And proud of it, too. And once this great pundit from Kashmir came, and all the other pundits of Navadvipa were so fearful of him because he would go around, he was Digvijay, which means he began challenging everyone. And if he defeated someone, he would embarrass them by making them sign a piece of paper saying that you have defeated me. That I've been defeated by this pundit. And this pundit had he had been blessed by Saraswati. And he came to Navadvipa to defeat everyone in Navadvipa. And all the other pundits, they were hoping that he would meet Nimai Pandit and not them. Because they were thinking, well, if he defeats Nimai Pandit, we can say anyway, he's just a boy. He's only 16 years old. So we'll be safe in that way. And if Nimai Pandit defeats him, we can say, and he's only 16 years old. Just imagine how intelligent we are. We can show people that. But Nimai Pandit did something very wonderful with this Digvijay Pandit, Mahaprabhu. He defeated him very, very effortlessly, and he didn't humiliate him in any way. But that pundit understood by the mercy of Saraswati, who he had been blessed by, that this boy was actually the Supreme Lord, the master of Saraswati. So I'm just mentioning that to show how powerful and great Nimai Pandit was. And then, one day, after his father, Jagannath Mishra, had passed away, he went to Gaya to perform the Shraddha ceremony. And there, this great pundit who had come with all his students to Gaya, he had a complete transformational experience. He went to the temple where the Lord's lotus feet are, the Padma of the Lord are. What's the name of the temple in Gaya? Padma, maybe. Vishnupad, yes. Have you been there? Has anyone been to Gaya? No. So, and there were Brahmins around. And they were all, there's a physical place, as I understand it, that where the Lord's footprints are manifest. The Vishnupada. And the Brahmins were glorifying the Lord's footprint. And they were saying, please, just come and see the Lord's footprint. Come and see them. Come and see them. And chanting verses and kirtan about the Lord's footprint. And Mahaprabhu went into ecstasy. And this is the first time in his life where we see the spark has been ignited. Or this is almost the precursor to the spark. And then at that time, by the arrangement of Providence, which means by Krishna's arrangement, which means by Mahaprabhu's arrangement, Sripad Iswara Puri came. And they met again. They had met in Nabadweep before. They had met. And Mahaprabhu asked him at that time, please, please, I have no hope unless you give me yourself. Please give me anything. And he spoke for him and he said, he understood you, Supreme Lord. And he said, you are the one who is capable of giving shelter to the whole world, and you're asking me to give shelter to you. But Ishwara Puri was given this wonderful service. He was so qualified and pure. He was given the wonderful service of giving initiation to Mahaprabhu. And then when Mahaprabhu took initiation from him, he went mad. He went mad. He was rolling on the ground. The mantra that he gave him was so powerful and his chanting of it so pure. This is actually what happened is described in Chaitanya Bhagavat, but also in Chaitanya Charitamrita. When Mahaprabhu was talking to the Brahmavadis, the Mayavadis in Benares. But he went mad. He was rolling on the ground. His body was erupting in ecstasy. Tears, and this is something that Mahaprabhu was doing throughout his life. Tears would pour from his eyes like the Ganga, like the flowing of the Ganga, like 20 streams of the Ganga. Completely unnatural, impossible for a human. And it describes it in Rathiyatra. Mahaprabhu was in Rathiyatra and chanting. The tears would come from his eyes, and it would make wet everyone around him, surrounding him. And it would be like water shot from a syringe. In other words, the force of his ecstatic love for Krishna, when in combination with the different elements of the body, were causing these dramatic transformations. When, if there is a volcano and it touches some water, if the volcano touches something else, the air, something else happens. So Mahaprabhu, in this way, his love for Krishna was completely erupting after taking initiation. He was jumping up and falling to the ground, rolling in the ground, laughing, crying, calling out. And these were not external But there was springing from his internal moods. And then he said, I'm going to Vrindavan. I'm leaving everything. The taste had reached the burning stage where he didn't want anything else. Scholarship, students, everything else finished. No other desires. I only want Krishna. Where can I find Krishna? Where can I find Krishna? Where can I find Krishna? Oh, Krishna. Krishna's in Vrindavan. Padamekam nagacchati. I'm going to Vrindavan to find Krishna. And he began leaving and going to Vrindavan. And suddenly, there was a voice. It was the demigod, who reminded him, whose consciousness was so immersed in love for Krishna that he wasn't conscious of anything else, reminded him that no, now is the time not to go to Vrindavan, but it is the time to begin the Sankirtan movement. That now you go back to Navadvip. It's the time for that, my Lord. You go back to Navadvip and start the Sankirtan movement. And this Sankirtan movement will spread all over the world and engulf everyone in the ecstasies that you are experiencing. Because it is like were you ever in a place where one person really starts laughing? And then it's catching, sort of, then everyone starts laughing. Yes or no? Did that ever happen? Yes. It's like that. When Mahaprabhu is erupting in ecstatic love for Krishna, everyone is captured by it, by the flames of his eruptions. And that is the Sankirtan movement as it spread all over the world. So, Mahaprabhu headed back towards Navadvip from Gaya. He did not go to Vrindavan. The voice told him, you'll go at another time. And indeed, he did go at another time. He headed back towards Navadvip to begin the Sankirtan movement. Now, what I would like to do right now is read a prayer. But to do this, I think that we'll have to, because I know that some of the devotees are a little bit tired after working very hard during the week and coming. So we have to do something to get some energy work moving. Do you know anything really good? Oh, we could wrestle with Vishnu. That would probably do it. Okay. Yes. Everyone, put your hands high in the air. But not. I mean, a real, real high. Real. See if you can touch the ceiling while you're sitting down. I can almost do it. Hare Krishna. Dad, say Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. But really say it. One more time. Now, if you do that, and here's an answer that I learned from Satyananda Maharaj. If you push your hands back as far as they can go, too, and then, okay, very good. Now everyone is full of energy. Now I'm going to ask you to all close your eyes. But, Chaitanya Prabhu, I want you to play that one, the first one, but not, okay, everyone. Close your eyes a little bit. How do you close your eyes a little bit? That won't work, either. Huh? Softly. Very, very softly. Much more softly. More softly. Okay. Now, because we have come from a long week of work and coming from so many different places, Yes, getting better.
What is funny about? Huh?
Let's go. I have a. You want to try something else?
Let's see if I have it. Find it.
Okay. So, close your eyes again. And close your ears too. Now it's easier to close your eyes than your ears. But I want you to go in your mind to a place that is not only very peaceful, but it's very beautiful. And that peaceful, beautiful place should be a place where, when you're in difficulty, you find your greatest shelter. Now, some of you may go your dearest deity. Well, go there and see your Lord. See your Lord, but don't go empty-handed. You can see his lotus feet. You can see the beauty of his dress. You can see him smiling. See your Lord. And see if you can quickly give him a most wonderful garland. But see the kind of flowers and the fragrance of those flowers. And offer it. And then bring something for your Lord to eat. You can cook it quickly, or you can have your mother cook it. Make sure you put tulsi on it. Beautiful golden or silver or jeweled plate. And it could all be in a beautiful cottage by a river that's flowing and filled with lotus flowers. And you might also like to make a wonderful necklace out of gold and jewels. Some devotees like to offer jewels or rubies, diamonds, whatever, sapphire, gold, silver, and give it to your shelter. And then I would like you to offer a prayer and present a deep desire that you have in your heart to your Lord. our desires are like sparks. Our spiritual desires can burst into flame by His name. And now, with the quiet voice of your heart and mind, please tell Him everything, your deepest, deepest, deepest thought at this time. Your deepest thoughts in the deepest part of your heart that you wouldn't tell anyone else. And when you're finished with that, please, very, very deeply and sincerely and loudly, but in your mind, and sweetly with musical accompaniment, chant Krishna's name and chant the name. But in your mind, loudly, sweetly, join the sankirtan. And when you're finished, just sit up very straight. For a few minutes. And please listen to these words of Vishwanath Bhagavati Thakur which described Mahaprabhu when he entered Navadvip after coming from Gaya. One day Gadardha Pandit heard the following words. And please, seal it in your mind's eye with your eyes closed. See the pictures that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur draws with his voice. One day, Gadardha Pandit heard the following words. Oh, Gadardha, I saw the most extraordinary person on the road to Gaya. His form was very handsome, and he roared like a thundercloud. His eyes rained tears as if they had become rain clouds, and he rolled about on the ground, his voice choked up in the ecstasy of love of God. All glories to that Lord, the son of Satyadeva. What kind of extraordinary state of consciousness has he attained? Although he is the leader of scholars, he no longer delights in study. When he holds class surrounded by his pupils, if he hears the sound, Hari, he begins to tremble. All glories to that Lord, the son of Satyadeva. Once, during class, Lord Chaitanya interrupted a pupil and asked, what are you saying? Instead of these verbs, you should constantly repeat the name of Krishna, the most famous of all worlds, according to the Vedas. Oh, students, without Krishna, what benefit can verbs give? All glories to Lord Chaitanya, the son of Satyadeva, who chants his own holy name in that way. No matter what the particular topic of study was, he would smile and instruct his astonished grammar students in this way. He would say, oh, students, please place the large two eyes of Sri Krishna which are as beautiful as two lotus petals within your heart. And please place his lotus feet within your hearts in the same way. Please do that. Place the Lord's lotus feet within your heart. All glories to that Lord, the Son of Sakshi. At other times, the Lord would say, O friend, where shall I go, and what shall I do to attain Lord Hari? Who will show him to me? Please tell me who will help me, in this way. Speaking thus, the Lord ran here and there and rolled about on the ground, their throats filled with grief. The stricken devotees called out to him. In this way, the Lord caused his mother Sati Devi to faint. All glories to that Lord, the Son of Sati Devi. The reflection of the splendid beauty of the Lord is not attainable even by millions of cupids. And with that splendor, the Lord uproots the darkness of ignorance of the age of Kali. Descending with the principal demigods, the Lord delighted the eyes of the residents of this earth planet. All glories to that effulgent Lord, the Son of Sakshi Devi. He is like a golden mountain that scatters jewels of pure love of Krishna. Because of his great mercy, he wandered on this earth. The Lord, known as Vishwambar, the maintainer of the universe, inundated and drowned his own universe with the currents of the Ganga River of tears of love of God flowing from his eyes. All glories to that Lord, the Son of Satyadeva. Lord Krishna said to Uddhav, what is the condition of Srimati Radharani now that I have come to Mathura? Please tell me so that I may understand. In order to fulfill his own desire, Lord Krishna, the son of the king of Braja, has descended as Lord Chaitanya to taste the mellows of his own devotional service. O Lord, O son of Sakti Devi, O ocean of transcendental qualities, please place in your abode all those who hear these eight verses and are full of faith in your lotus feet. Please accept those readers whose intelligence is pure and who follow in the footsteps of the great devotees who are full of love for you, headed by Srila Rupa Goswami. Now go back to your deity, your shelter, and offer your full Dandavat obeisances and a final prayer before returning to Nanandagram with your eyes slowly open. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was with his devotees in Navadvipa, and they were chanting Krishna's name, he had melted their hearts, and they, who naturally loved him, became completely attached to him. And they had been insulted. All the devotees had been given trouble by the non-devotees in Navadvipa. But by the strength of Mahaprabhu, the trouble had ended, and And they had a huge sankirtan going to the house of the Qazi. And everyone, all the devotees, were fearless. And then something quite wonderful happened. But wonderful in a terrible way. One day, while Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in the mood of Srimati Radharani, he was chanting the name of the gopi. And there was a Brahmin student who had heard that they knew Nimai Pandit, that they wanted to go and see him. They had heard that he was such a great, powerful leader of the Sankirtan movement. So he went to go and see him. And he saw that Mahaprabhu, then Nimai Pandit, was chanting the names of the gopis in ecstasy and in a very internal secret mood. And he said to him, "Why are you chanting the names of the gopis? You should be chanting the names of Krishna. This is what Shastra says. Chant the names of Krishna. There's nowhere it says to chant the names of the gopis." And Mahaprabhu, in a special internal mood, became angry at him because he was in the mood of Srimati Radharani when Krishna had left Vrindavan, and sometimes in love they would criticize Krishna. They would say, "Oh, we don't want to hear anything more about this Krishna. He's now in Mathura enjoying with the ladies of Mathura. We don't want to hear anything more about him." So when that student said to Mahaprabhu that you should chant the names of Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in that internal mood, began to criticize Krishna. And he said, "Don't you tell me to chant the name of Krishna." And he picked up a stick. And he began to chase that Brahmin. And the Brahmin ran and ran and ran and ran and ran. And he wasn't very spiritually advanced. And finally, Mahaprabhu calmed down and he went to a more external mood. But the student kept running and running and covered with sweat. He went to his friends, the other students, and they said, "You should." They said to him, "What's happened to you? You've been running and running and running." And he said, "I'm lucky I'm still alive. You know what happened to me? Nimai Pandit chased me with a stick, threatening to kill me." And he said, "Well, who does he think he is? He's a Brahmin Pandit. Aren't we Brahmin Pandits too? If he tries this again, we'll teach him a lesson." And they began to criticize him. They began to criticize Mahaprabhu. So when Mahaprabhu found out about this, he was with the devotees. And it is very difficult at this point in time, at this place, to understand the relationship that the devotees of Mahaprabhu had with him. Really, they didn't know anything else but him. Their minds were focused on him. Every night, all night long, they would gather together and chant Krishna's name. The Mahaprabhu would exhibit ecstasy. And by his consciousness, the whole realm of the spiritual world would open up. And they were all living in that and living in their relationship with him in that way. So in their association, Nityananda Prabhu was there too. Mahaprabhu said something very mysterious. He said, "I have taken the medicine Pipalakkad, which is a medicine to decrease kapha, but instead the kapha, the disease, has increased." None of the devotees could understand the meaning behind his words, but Nityananda Prabhu. He understood. And immediately, fear entered his heart. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took Nityananda Prabhu to a faraway place. And he said, "Oh, Nityananda, I've come to this world to give people the medicine that will bring him out of this world and bring them to the spiritual world. But the medicine that I've tried to give them is causing the exact opposite effect. They are starting to criticize me. They are starting to blaspheme me. And by the virtue of that criticism and blasphemy, they're all going to be degraded and go to hell. The medicine is not working. And I've decided to take them out." Now, Nityananda Prabhu didn't say anything. But in his heart, he knew many things. And one of them was, how is Mother Sati going to survive? Because Vishwarup, her son, had left and taken sannyas. Her husband, Jagannath Misra, had died, and she had no one. And her life was being sustained by just looking at the face of her beloved son, Nimai Pandit, Vishwambar. Another thing he thought was, Mahaprabhu, when he puts his mind on doing anything, no one can stop him. So then, Nimai Pandit asked Nitai, "Well, what do you think? I always listen to your words. What do you think? Should I do it?" And Nityananda Prabhu said, "Lord, you are independent. I cannot tell you no. But you should ask the other devotees and see what they think." He was being very tactful. "Ask the other devotees and see what they think. If they give you permission, then it's okay." It is like, how could you give permission to someone you love doing this, leaving? Because sannyas means you never return to your village again. You can never return again. When we think about love, we think about serving the beloved. That's how we are trained, taking the center away from me and placing it upon that which will please my beloved. And what happens if our beloved is saying something like this, that he's going to leave, and that's his pleasure, and we will never see him again? Can we say, "Oh, out of my love for you, I think this is a great idea"? No, it's actually not possible. It's not possible. This is the nature of spontaneous love. So then Mahaprabhu went to see Mukunda. And he said, Mukunda was very expert at singing verses, slokas, in such a way, by his own experience of the deep meaning of this, it would touch everyone's heart, especially the heart of Mahaprabhu. So he asked Mukunda to sing some slokas. And Mahaprabhu was floating in ecstasy. And then he said, "Mukunda, I'm going to take sannyas." And Mukunda also, what will happen to Mother Sati? Lord, you are everything to us. And they thought of him who had beautiful flowing hair, who is the epitome of beauty. They thought of him as an austere, shaven-headed sannyasi. It was intolerable for them, separated from their association, intolerable for them. Mahaprabhu went to see Gadadhar. I'm going to take sannyas. And Dharada said, why? Why do you need to do that? Everything is here. We have our sankirtan. Where in the Shastra does it say that to find Krishna, you have to take sannyas? Where does it say that? He challenged him. And then gradually, because Mahaprabhu was asking the devotees, Mother Sati heard of this. Because Mahaprabhu's mood was always that, and only that. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? The flame of his desire were always burning brightly. Where is Krishna? I don't want anything else. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Can you tell me where Krishna is? One time Mahaprabhu had gone to see Gadadhar and said, can you tell me where Krishna is? This was in his house where Mother Sati was there. And Gadadhar replied, Krishna is in your heart. And immediately Mahaprabhu began tearing away at his chest. Oh, he's in my heart. And Gadadhar calmed him down. Don't worry, he's there. He calmed him down. And Mother Sati said, you have such a good way of dealing with him. You always stay with Mahaprabhu. You stay with him. And Gadadhar was always with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after that point. Always. They were always childhood friends, always with him. He had nothing on his mind. Where is Krishna? He couldn't even worship his deity anymore of Lord Narayan. Because as he was worshipping, tears would be coming from his eyes and his body would be trembling. He couldn't perform the puja. He would be dancing all night long with the devotees, falling to the ground. He would be showing so many symptoms of ecstasy. The devotees would be completely ecstatic. Continuously, they lived in an ocean of ecstasy. One time, because there were complaints about the loud sankirtan, they were afraid that the local, because there was a decree by the local Muslims that you couldn't perform any religious activities publicly. The Hindus couldn't do that. But they were loudly chanting Krishna's name. So all the people became fearful that there would be a reprisal by the Qazi. And they kept saying that it's all the Srivas Thakur's fault. He's because the kirtans were in his house. Let's take his house, and not the devotees saying this, but the outsiders. We'll throw his house into the Ganga. Get rid of him. He's causing so much trouble. And Srivas was actually afraid. And he approached, Mahaprabhu approached him and said, are you afraid of them? If they come in a boat, I will board that boat. And I will tell them, bring elephants, bring horses, bring cows, bring dogs, bring all animals on this boat. And now tell your leading qazis and holy men to change their hearts. And they will not be able to do so. And then I will say, now watch. Chant, chant. And all the animals, the elephants, the horses, the tigers, they will begin to chant in ecstasy and tears will be coming from their eyes and they'll roll on the ground. Oh, Srivas, do you believe me? And then Srivas stood there and he saw his niece. One of his little girl, Narayani. He said, what? And he pointed to Narayani. He said, Narayani, dance! Chant! And Narayani began to chant Krishna's name in ecstasy and roll on the ground, crying out, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. all the devotees have had all these experiences with Mahaprabhu, their heart completely enveloped by love for Krishna, being in his association. He's saying he's going to leave. And when Mother Sachi heard, she was crying. Where in the dust does it say that it is religious to leave your mother who has no one to depend on? And he calmed her down by saying, "My mother, you have served me completely without any thought of yourself since my very birth. I can never give you up. I will always stay with you. But you should also know that I have come in other forms as well. I am in the form of the holy name. And you can always, anyone, everyone can always be with me in my form of the holy name and also in my form of the deity. In this way, I will be with you always. I can never repay you. And I will always stay with you." He was somewhat passive. The devotees told Mahaprabhu, "Please, stay longer. Don't leave." So, he said, "All right." Prabhupada once told me, "If something is auspicious, do it immediately. And if something is inauspicious, delay it." From the point of view of the devotee, this was the most inauspicious thing that could happen. They would be reft of the association of Caitanya Mahaprabhu. So Mahaprabhu, every day, chanted just like before, and the devotees forgot his words that, "I will leave, I will take sannyas, I will do it," he said. They forgot, and for several weeks this went on. And then, on the Makara Sankranti, Mahaprabhu told Nityananda Prabhu, "On this day, or tomorrow, on the Makara Sankranti, I will cross the Ganga to Katwa and go to the ashram of Sri Keshava Bharti tomorrow and take sannyas." It had to be done. The moralists, as Prabhupada will say, may accuse him of being cruel, causing trouble to those who love him. But he's teaching that on the spiritual quest, on the great journey to Krishna, sometimes one has to do things impelled by Krishna that are required, that may not be pleasing to others. Arjuna had to kill his relative, because the ultimate standard of good and bad is what the Krishna sees. And it is very difficult for a conditioned soul who has some goodness to accept the point. For us, being brought up in the West in the 60s, we hear of Krishna dancing with the wives of others in the middle of the night, and we think, well, what was so? So? And the gopis ran away from their husbands and danced with them in the middle of Krishna in the middle of the night. Okay, so? What was the big surrender in that? But the gopis were the pillars of chastity. It was impossible for them to leave their husband and do that. even because they loved Krishna, so even they still couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. But Krishna had his ultimate weapon, his flute. And when he played his flute on that night, they lost their choice. They went mad. And they ran to Krishna. Ran. And they were the most moral, most safe. Perfect. And they had performed the most chaste activity. These points are discussed in the Bhagavatam in detail in the questions by Prithit Maharaj in the 33rd chapter of the 10th canto. But in any case, Nityananda Prabhu was told to tell four people and four people only, Mother Sachi, Chandrasekhar, and two others. Haridas and Gadadhar would sleep in the same room as Mahaprabhu. And that night, they were sleeping there. And then in the middle of the night, Mahaprabhu woke up. And Sri Vrindavan Das Thakur described how he breathed through his left nostril. There's a mystic way of telling the difference between auspicious and inauspicious times by the breath in the nostril. Mahaprabhu breathed through his left nostril, understood the auspicious time for his departure had arrived. He stood up, he walked to the door, and Mother Sati was there, having been awake all night long. And just trying. Mahaprabhu told her, I will take full responsibility for you materially and spiritually. I can never repay you. And put his hand and placed it on his heart. Dust from her feet, smeared it upon his head, circumambulated her, and walked out. He went to the Ganga, and there is a ghat called Nirdaya ghat, which means what? No kindness of heart. Nirdaya. No compassion. And in that gut, because that gut allowed Mahaprabhu to cross the Ganga, the devotees named it Nirdaya ghat. He crossed the Ganga and he went to the ashram in Katwa of Keshava Bharti. And the next morning, he asked Keshava Bharti, begged him to give him sannyas. He begged him, and Keshava Bharti agreed. Suddenly there were thousands of people there, all wondering how will Mother Sati live, but yet seeing the ecstasy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were so overwhelmed with their own ecstasy, they wanted to witness. When it came the time for the barber to shave Mahaprabhu's head, he couldn't do it. For so long, he stood there, unable to do it. And to this day, at this point, they took Mahaprabhu's hair and they made it in the ashram of Keshava Bharti, which is still there in Katwa. They made a samadhi, a tool samadhi, out of Mahaprabhu's hair. Most wonderful place. And then he bathed in the Ganga. He came out in saffron cloth. He took the Bharti. Amazing. What name? He needs a special name. What name? And then Mahaprabhu said, before Keshava Bharati Maharaj gave him the sannyas mantra, he said, last night I had a dream. And in that dream, a mantra was revealed to me. And I want to know from you if this is the mantra, the mantra that you will give me. And Keshava said, what is it? And Mahaprabhu whispered in his ear. And in that way, he gave him initiation. And then Keshava Bharati said, yes, that is the mantra. And then he repeated it into the ear of Mahaprabhu. And then Chandrasekhar gathered all the required elements for the sacrifice. Then it came time for the giving of the name. And Keshava Bharati thought, he's giving Krishna to everyone. And he elevates everyone's chaitanya consciousness. And then he put his hand on his heart and said, your name, Sri Krishna. And everyone went mad. And Mahaprabhu danced, jumped up and down, rolled on the ground. And everyone got completely caught up in his ecstasy. Keshava Bharati can dance. And he started heading towards the Radhadesh area where the Ganga doesn't flow. And there are two different descriptions of his heading in that way. But I don't want to talk about his journey there now, because this evening we will hear about his journey to the house of Advaitacharya. And then his... No, we won't hear that. We'll hear about his going to Puri. Which one will we hear tonight? We will hear one of them, but it will fit into the story, the pastime, but I don't want to tell that part right now. But I would like to tell, so he went towards Radhadesh, and then he headed back to the house of Advaitacharya, and then ultimately went to Jagannath Puri, and that's what we'll hear tonight, about his going from Advaitacharya's house to Jagannath Puri. And when he was at Advaitacharya's house, all the devotees from Navadvip who had been broken hearted, Mother Sati and the other devotees didn't eat for 12 days. The next morning, after Mahaprabhu had taken sannyas, the devotees naturally they came to Mahaprabhu's house and Sati was eating. Never seen her looking like that. They had come to pay their obeisances, respect to Nimai Pandit as they did every morning. And she just said to them, you can take everything. Shastra says that the Lord's property belongs to all the devotees. He has left me. All the devotees were completely heartbroken. And they stayed that way, not eating, not sleeping, just in deep separation from Mahaprabhu, brokenhearted, ecstatically, but brokenhearted, until they were told that Mahaprabhu would soon be at the house of Advaitacharya, and then all in Shantipur, and then all the devotees from Navadvip went there. Mahaprabhu went there. And the instructions will now continue. The pastime We'll stop a little bit so we can hear some of the instructions. Wonderful. Mahaprabhu had, he himself had fasted for 3 days. Then he got to the home of a Dvaita Charja. Dvaita Charja said, I've just cooked one mixed sabzi for you. You just come and sit down. Now you're a sannyasi. Just Mahaprabhu said, I only want to eat a little bit. And he said, I've only cooked a little bit for you. And then he sat down with Nityananda Prabhu, and there was this huge beast. And then there were pastimes between Mahaprabhu and Dvaita Charja and Nityananda Prabhu. And then the devotees would have kirtan every night when they came. In the day, they would discuss Krishna Katha, and in the night, they would have kirtan. Now, let us just find where we want to begin. Now there was kirtan. No? Just wait one moment. We got lost in the past. Must have looked up. There. Yes. Mother Sati came and saw Mahaprabhu again. And she saw him for the first time with a shaved head and in saffron. And it had been done. And there was nothing else. She couldn't do anything about it. So, Mahaprabhu began to speak. He said, he gathered all the devotees, including Mother Sati, around him, and he said, without your order, I tried to go to Vrindavan, and there was some obstacle, and I had to return. My dear friend, although I have suddenly accepted this renounced order, I still know that I shall never be indifferent to you. My dear friends, as long as I remain manifest, I shall never give you up, nor shall I ever give up my mother. After accepting sannyas, it is not the duty of a sannyasi to remain at his birthplace encircled by relatives. Make some arrangement so that I may not leave you, and at the same time, people may not blame me for remaining with my relatives after taking sannyas. After hearing Lord Chaitanya's statement, all the devotees, headed by Advaita Charja, they approached Mother Sati. And they submitted Lord Chaitanya's statement, and Mother Sati, who is the mother of the universe, she began to speak. Sati Mata said, it will be great happiness for me if Nimai, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, stays here. But at the same time, if someone blames him, it will be my great unhappiness. So here is Prabhupada's purport. It is a great happiness for a mother if her son does not leave home to search out Krishna, but remains with her. At the same time, if a son does not search out Krishna, but simply remains at home, he is certainly blamed by experienced saintly persons. And such blame certainly causes great unhappiness for a mother. If a real mother wants her son to progress spiritually, she had better allow him to go out searching for Krishna. The mother naturally desires the welfare of the son. If a mother does not allow her son to search for Krishna, she is called Ma, which indicates Maya. By allowing her son to go as a sannyasi and search for Krishna, Sati Mata instructs all mothers of the world. She indicates that all sons should become real devotees of Krishna and should not stay at home under the care of an affectionate mother. To stop the cycle of birth and death, one has to understand Krishna as he is. Simply by knowing Krishna, one can stop the process of rebirth into this material world. By acting in Krishna consciousness, one can return to Godhead. The highest perfection of life for a father, a mother, a spiritual master, a husband, or any other family member is to help others return home back to Godhead. That is the most preferred welfare activity for the benefit of relatives. Therefore, Satrimata, although the mother of Nimai Pandit, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, considered all the facts and decided to allow her son to go out and search for Krishna. At the same time, she made some arrangements in order that she might get news of the activities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, Satrimata and Prabhupada are making the point that this is the most important thing in life. This search is really what life is about. And every other consideration is relative and a lesser consideration. It's a very heavy point. It's a very heavy point that is very important to make, because there are so many pulls on each and every one of us. There are so many pulls and pushes. The material world tells us again and again and again in a thousand, a million ways that there are other important things that you must be doing other than finding the best way for you to go to Krishna's lotus feet, to find out who you are, to find out your spiritual life, to understand Krishna deeply and intimately, to make the flame of your spiritual life burn brightly and let it burn to ashes. The material attachments are there. This is the most important thing in life. It is a very heavy statement, but the Vedic culture insisted on this point. Look what Arjuna had to do in the Bhagavad Gita. He had to fight Bhishma, Drona, Pramukhata. Krishna drove him right in front of his teachers and grandfather, Bhishma and Drona, and said, fight, behold all the Kurus who are now assembled before you, right in front of the face of the people he loved most. And he would have to fight and kill them. And indeed, Arjuna had to shoot Bhishma. How horrible. Sometimes, to please Krishna, or rather, to please Krishna, everything should be sacrificed. Very difficult for the material world, impossible for the material mind to accept this. It will think of 5,000. Do you mean to say that if this happened, you mean I'm supposed to do this to my mother who's 92 years old and who's like this and this and this? No, I'm not. Obviously not saying. But for Krishna's pleasure, this is the standard of Braja. This is the standard of Vrindavan. For Krishna's pleasure, for Krishna's pleasure. For the resonance of Vrindavan, it is completely spontaneous and natural. Why our material minds rebel about this point is because we're not on that level. The material mind takes this as the most bitter poison. But this is the standard of Vrindavan, the residence of Mother Yashoda. To stop one drop of perspiration from coming unnecessarily, from any discomfort coming to Krishna, she is ready to die 1,000 times. When she would be separated from Krishna for a moment, she would cry, cry, like a cow separated from its calf, a calf. This is spontaneous love. This type of intense, full relationship with Krishna is actually Krishna consciousness. This is the Krishna consciousness of the resonance of Vrindavan. Never in Krishna, as devotees, do we imitate. But yet we should know what the ideal is, the ideal and the standard of Vrindavan is. The cowherd boys, the gopis, they would blink their eyes and it would be intolerable for them because they couldn't see Krishna in the blinking of the eyes. This is Krishna. This is love. This is prema bhakti of the highest level. Again, no imitation. But yet, this is the standard. There is all religions teach relationship. That we have to have a relationship with Krishna. But what is the most intimate relationship we can have with God, with the Supreme? It is the most brilliant love brings the most intimacy. So Prabhupada brings out this point in his purport that love for our beloved relatives is demonstrated by assisting them in the spiritual quest, in their spiritual journey. And this is the greatest welfare work, to help others. Now, let us read further. So Mother Sachi continued speaking, and she said, this is a perfect arrangement, because criticizing him, if he gets criticized, of course I want him to be near me, but him being criticized would cause me the greatest pain, and that would be completely intolerable. Now, does this mean that we should all follow in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and just simply all leave home? You ready? How old are you? 14. You ready? No. What do we do? Is this a movement that everyone must take sannyas immediately and the Matajis also? And just everyone, no one's going to cook anymore and take care of the children. Why should the men only be serious about the spiritual life? We're not our bodies also. Everyone should just... No. Because there are more instructions that Mahaprabhu's life are going to tell us. But the first principle is the essential nature of the spiritual journey, that this is the purpose of life. Now, here are some other principles that are, we could say, balance it and practical for most of us. So after Mahaprabhu stayed with the devotees and chanted with them in a Dvaitacharya's house for 10 or 12 days, he requested everyone to return home and in their home do sankirtan, chant congregationally. Gare yana kara sada Krishna sankirtana, Krishna nama Krishna katha Krishna aradhana. This is the instruction that he gave all the people. He didn't tell them, everyone now takes sannyas. This is for those who have that adhikar, who have the capacity to fully and only focus. But he told everyone, he requested them to return to their home because he was leaving for Jagannath Puri and begin chanting the holy name congregationally. He also requested them to worship Krishna, to chant his holy name, and discuss his holy pastime. And in Prabhupada's purport, he explained, this is the Hare Krishna movement. It is nicely explained here by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, authoritatively. It is not that everyone has to take sannyas like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Everyone can execute the cult of Krishna consciousness at home, as ordered by the Lord. Everyone can congregationally chant the holy name of Krishna, the Hare Krishna Mantra. One can also discuss the subject matter of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and install deities of Radha and Krishna or Gaura-Nitai, or both, and worship them very carefully in one's home. It is not that we have to open different centers all over the world. Now, listen to what Prabhupada's going to say here. It's not that there has to be many big temples all over the world, even. Whoever cares for the Krishna consciousness movement can install deities at home and, under superior guidance, worship the deity regularly, chant the Hare Krishna mantra, and discussing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. We are actually teaching in our classes how to go about this. One who feels that he is not ready to live in a temple or undergo strict regulative principles in the temple, especially householders who live with wife and children, can start a center at home by installing the deity, worshipping the Lord morning and evening, chanting Hare Krishna, discussing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyone can do this at home without difficulty. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested all the devotees present there to do so. Let the fire of our relationship with Krishna, let it burn. Let it burn more and more brightly. Let it burn our material attachments, and let it flame burst into the flames of pure love for Krishna. And then, like Narada Muni, the instant the body leaves, if the flame is burning brightly, then the instant the body drops, the spiritual body, our real self, will manifest. Because that's what we've cultivated. That's what we've been desiring. And this is the process. I mean, the whole Krishna consciousness movement is the process of increasing the desire to be with Krishna and trying to minimize the desires that entangle us in the material world and use whatever material circumstances we are in, somehow or another, transform them into service for Krishna. This comes up very strongly, not in today's class, but in tomorrow's class it will come up. Whatever circumstances we find ourselves in, whoever we are, whatever body we're in, whatever gifts Krishna has given us, whatever mentalities we have, to somehow use that in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. And at the same time, use these material circumstances, and Prabhupada here is speaking about the householder, to live an ideal life for a householder, worshipping the deity at home. Krishna Nam, Krishna Kata, Krishna Aradhana. Krishna Aradhana, worship the deity, chant Krishna's names, and speak about Krishna. This is how to do it from the platform of being a householder. Now, there's more instructions that come out in Prabhupada's purport. Please listen. Advaitacharya set an ideal example for all householder devotees in his receiving of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees and in execution of a daily festival at his home. If one has the proper means and wealth, he should occasionally invite the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, who are engaged in preaching all over the world, and hold a festival at home, simply by distributing prasad and talking about Krishna during the day, and holding congregational chanting for at least 3 hours in the evening. This procedure must be adopted in all centers of the heart of the Krishna consciousness movement. Thus, they will daily perform Sirkirtan Jagya. One should worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his four associates, the Panchatattva, by distributing prasadam and holding congregational chanting. Indeed, that jagya or sacrifice is most recommended in this age of Kali. In this age, other jagyas are not possible to perform, but this jagya can be performed everywhere and anywhere without difficulty. Practical. And then, one more purport that describes this point on how householders should progress. Thank you all for such a long class. Maybe we can open the windows again and you're all still awake. Some of you, anyway. Good. Thank you. Again, this is the ideal householder life. The husband and wife live together. The husband works very hard to secure paraphernalia for worshipping Lord Vishnu. The wife at home cooks a variety of foodstuff for Lord Vishnu, and the husband offers it to the deity. After that, aarti is performed, and the prasad is distributed amongst family members and guests. According to the Vedic principles, there must always be a guest in the householder's house. In my childhood, I'm not saying this because I'm particularly hungry right now, by the way. In my childhood, Prabhupada says, I have actually seen my father receive not less than 4 guests every day. And in those days, my father's income was not very great. Nonetheless, there was no difficulty in offering prasad to at least 4 guests every day. According to Vedic principles, a householder, before taking lunch, should go outside and shout very loudly. This might not work in Melbourne. And when we first started preaching in the 60s, I remember we used to, at the Sunday feast, Rupanuga Prabhu used to ask, and this was one of my services, I would go outside, very embarrassed, if anyone is hungry, please come in. We have food here. In the West, it doesn't quite work. They think. And then the police come or something like that. But actually, one time on a morning walk, someone who had just gotten married asked Srila Prabhupada, what does it mean to be a householder? How should I be a householder? So he was expecting, I'm not sure what he was expecting, but usually what about, you know, either about the relationship between the husband and wife or the children or this and that. And Prabhupada said, before you eat, go outside and call out, if anyone is hungry, please come and eat. 3 times, and then you can eat. And the devotee, some young Western American devotee, he thought Prabhupada didn't understand what he had asked him. I asked him about household, and he said, before you eat, you should go out and call out, if anyone's hungry, please come and eat. And so he asked Prabhupada again, Prabhupada, what are the duties of a householder? How should a householder live his life? And Prabhupada said, before you eat, yourself, go out and call out loudly, if anyone is hungry, please come, we have food for you. 3 times. He called out 3 times. He only asked Prabhupada 2 times. But why is this so important? Because there's such a tendency in household life to want to accumulate more and more and more and more and more, and there's never enough. No matter how much one has, it's not enough. So the essential point of household life, to keep it religious and pure, is charity. Giving. Because there's never enough. Always thinking, I don't have enough, I don't have enough, I don't have enough. We need more and more and more and more and more to provide security. But real security is having Krishna take care of you. And having Krishna place his merciful glance on you, that is the ultimate security. So it tests our faith to be charitable. Tests our faith. Is Krishna really going to take care of me, or when his hands are out there, and just as I'm about to land, he'll pull his hands away from what will happen? And we find out, yes, I'm a devotee. Yes, I'm a devotee. Yes, I'm a devotee. But actually, our faith is we have faith in ourselves. We have faith in our credit card. We have faith in this. We have faith in that. And that's the glory of sannyas, what it's supposed to be. And when Mahaprabhu, when he starts traveling, when he leaves the house of Advaita Charja, he asks, he's traveling with four people. He's traveling with Damodar Pandit, Nityananda Prabhu, Mukunda Datta. The three of them are traveling with Mahaprabhu. And they leave Advaita Charja's house, and the first thing he asks them is, have any of you brought any supplies? Meaning a second set of clothes or some food or anything like that? And they said, no, we don't have the power to do such a thing without your permission. Very good. Like that story of Ramanujacharya, when someone wanted to realize God, maybe Paresh, one of his disciples, he said, what is a fast way I can realize God? And he said, walk south for 7 days. And he said, what? But he was obedient, so he just started walking south immediately. He just walked south. And first night, there was nothing to eat, no place to sleep, and someone came and offered him some food and, why don't you sleep here? He woke up the next morning, started traveling south. The next day, someone took care of him in this way, and someone took care of him in that way, and someone took care of him in that way, and someone took care of him in that way. And then next day, he walked south, and someone took care of him in that way, and this way, and this way. That is the real freedom from anxiety. By being on, like the child, on the lap of the mother who he knows is going to take care of him, because of the relationship, because of the love, because it's tested, because he's grown up with that trusting. So we need to grow up with the trusting of Krishna. So that comes because we're no longer little babies, we're big baby. That comes from doing something for Krishna's pleasure and seeing if Krishna takes care of you. And that's what happens. The devotees who distribute books, they go out and distribute books. And first you think, I'm not a very good book distributor, as if it's all you. And then after a while, you learn how to stop people and, you know, where you're coming from. And here or out of town, is that what people say? Still, yeah, you're from here or out of town. Good question. And then after a while you start thinking, oh, I'm pretty good at this. I'm a good book distributor. And then Krishna like cuts it off. And there's nothing you can do and no one wants the book. And then you start, oh, okay, Krishna, what are you going to do? You're there and you can't go back with not, everyone will laugh at you or something like that. They'll know you're in Maya if you go back without distributing any books. So you have to do something. So what do? You start praying. You start praying, Krishna, if you want me to distribute a book, you're going to have to do it. I have no capacity on my own. And suddenly, maybe someone takes it. And you say, wow. And these little, you say, little personal miracles start happening when we try to do something for Krishna. And they're like a touch, a gentle touch on our shoulder, that Krishna reassures us, yes, I'm here now, and I've always been here. And then you try to tell someone, oh, this wonderful thing happened, and it doesn't sound like anything. It doesn't sound like anything. Oh, maybe this, it could have been this, or it could have been that, it could have been this or that. But Krishna lets you know that it's him. And that way, we build up strength. And that way, someone like Narada Muni, all his whole life, just chanting and hearing about Krishna, satisfied, what were the other two? Humble and non-envious, because his heart was full of his relationship with Krishna. So take sannyas and do it. Depend on Krishna and Krishna's service. Be a householder and do it. But do it is the point. Prabhupada continues in this purport. The householder's life with this type of charity, with the food giving, is also a kind of austerity. Because of this, the householder's life is called the Grihastha Ashram. Although a person may live with his wife and children happily in Krishna consciousness, he also observes the regulative principles followed in any temple. If there is no Krishna consciousness, the householder's abode is called a Griha Medhi's house. Householders in Krishna consciousness are actually Grihastha, that is, those living in the ashram with their families and children. Sri Advaita Prabhu was an ideal Grihastha, and his house was the ideal Grihastha ashram. Very, very interestingly, in China, the devotees there in China have this interesting habit, because they didn't know anything when they first started. Some of the devotees who preached to them must have told them this point. So they don't say, I'm going back to my house now. They say, I'm going back to my ashram. That's how they think about it. That's how we should think. And that's how we should act. And this is Prabhupada's book, the ideal. And we should see how we want to live our life. Okay, so Mahaprabhu was teaching how about the importance of this great search. And he's teaching about how to do it as a sannyasi. He's teaching on how to do it as a householder. But what about, there's always individuals who need their individual instructions. And that also comes. Individual arrangements can be made for everyone. For everyone. Because Sachimata was in an impossible condition. She couldn't be with her son because he was a sannyasi and he couldn't stay in the village anymore. And she couldn't not be with him because it would break her heart. So he made an arrangement to solve this impossible problem. Because Krishna can do that. He can make the perfect arrangement to solve all our individual situations. So her arrangement, which he was satisfied with, he would go and live in Jagannath Puri, because the devotees from people from Navadvipa always were going back and forth from Puri. So she would at least see him and hear of him sometimes. The Mahaprabhu would send Mahaprasadam to her. He would go there in an uppercut form. Continuously, whenever she offered food, he would take the food. This comes out later when is it Jagannanda or maybe Damodar Pandit, someone. But Sachi would offer food to the deity, because there are two ways. You want the association of Mahaprabhu, you want the association of Krishna. What were the two ways that he said to the devotees? He wasn't just trying to tell them something, give them a sweet when they wanted something else, and so he would leave. so they'd be happy. He said, no, I'm there in the deity. I'm there in the holy name. Take me in these forms. Take me, I'm yours. Oh, come and live in your house. I can be with you at any time, every time. Any time, you just say my name, wanting me to be there, I'm there. I'm yours, take me, he said.
Well, is the fault on his side, or I'm feeling lonely and I'm not very Krishna conscious and not very, where's the fault lie? It lies in the deep insincerity in my heart.
So that's okay, because that's part of the journey, the search.
How is it possible? What's your name?
Huh?
How is it possible for you to be sitting the whole time? So long. How are you doing it?
Thank you.
But all the other devotees, it's not easy to do. So we're almost finished.
So, and Haridas Thakur, he starts crying. Mahaprabhu is going to Puri. And Haridas Thakur, everyone is happy because they can finally, they know they can see him there. And, but Haridas Thakur, he began to cry. He thought, here in Navadvipa, amongst these devotees, I can see Mahaprabhu all the time. But in Jagannath Puri, it's very strict, smarta, smriti following Brahmins. I can't enter the temple because I'm born in a Islamic Muslim family. He began to cry. He said, everyone's going to be okay but me. He said, you're going to Jagannath Puri, and that is all right. But what will be my destination? I'm not able to go to Jagannath Puri. Because I'm the lowest of men, I shall not be able to see. And then without seeing you, how will I be able to maintain my sinful life? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied to Thakur Haridas, please, check your humility. Because he is Namacharya, the teacher of how to chant the holy name, and he was the personification of humility, thinking how much I need the shelter of the holy name. And therefore he could chant continuously, practically, because he needed it. Like a fish needs water, Haridas Thakur, due to his humility, felt himself needing the shelter of the holy name. That's why I don't chant all the time, because I have so many other important things to do that I can do myself. But Haridas Thakur felt himself so fallen and so humble, although he was the most exalted and learned among people. He was thinking, who's going to take care of me? But he didn't. When he was thinking like that, didn't turn on his computer or his mobile phone and download his emails or pull out a computer game or surf the net or turn on a movie. He turned to Mahaprabhu. He didn't turn away from Mahaprabhu. He turned to Mahaprabhu, who was touched by his humility and touched by him thinking that I have no other shelter but you. And if I am disallowed from your shelter, I don't have a life. I don't have an existence. So he didn't turn away and think of an alternative plan. I could always drive a taxi. What else? I think I have to do something. No. How am I going to stay alive? So this is what Mahaprabhu said, very interestingly. He said, I will place a petition before Lord Jagannath, and that he will certainly take you there to Jagannath Puri. So Mahaprabhu didn't give a specific solution there. But what he did do is said, I will offer my prayer to Lord Jagannath. And Mahaprabhu is saying, yes, we will make some arrangement in this way. What is the difficulty? And indeed, Haridas Thakur ended up with a place very close to Mahaprabhu named Siddhabakul. Tomorrow, no, not tomorrow, but the next day, Krishna willing, there will be some special mercy from Siddhabakul. And Mahaprabhu made a tree with a Haridas to just sit under and just chant Krishna's name all day long, and Mahaprabhu every day himself would bring him prasadam. He was taken care of. There's no one who won't get taken care of. This is the point here. Even me. And then, one more example of a special arrangement. Advaitacharya then said to Mahaprabhu, please, show me mercy and stay another 2 or 4 days. And Mahaprabhu said, okay. So he stayed for 2 or 4 more days. And they just had kirtan. They did the same thing. Kirtan, Krishna kirtan, in this way, they were in the spiritual world. They're with Krishna, fully satisfied, humble, and unenvious. Material world is pride, unsatisfied, and envious. Narottama Das Thakur compares trying to be happy when we have envy in our heart is to having spears in the heart. Because you look around and so many things. Anytime you see someone has something that you don't have, it causes you pain. And therefore that's what an envious person tries to do, is try to rid the world, at least mentally, of anyone who has something that he wants and doesn't have. What a painful situation. And then 2 or 4 days passed, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu circumambulated his mother and started for Jagannath Puri. In the house of Advaitacharya, there arose a tumultuous crying. But Mahaprabhu remained unaffected. He left swiftly, and Advaitacharya followed him with tears coming from his eyes. Don't leave. Don't leave. Srila Prabhupada's purport. As Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, the word nirapeksha means not being affected by anything material and remaining fixed in the service of the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not very much care for the roaring tumult and cry in the house of Advaitacharya, which he heard when starting for Jagannath Puri. Worldly moralists may criticize Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for being very cruel, but the Lord did not care for such criticism. As the world teacher of this Krishna consciousness movement, he actually showed that a person seriously engaged in Krishna consciousness should not be affected by worldly affection. In other words, that can't stop us from our mission. If it's not a can't, because the point is, if it does, we've lost something. And human life is meant for something very special. The best course is to engage in rendering service to the Lord and to become callous to material objectives. Externally, everyone is attached to material things. Externally. But if one becomes entangled in such things, he cannot make progress in Krishna consciousness. Because it's a matter of our desires. Because Krishna will fulfills our desires on the simplest level. So if we are keeping, maintaining, cultivating desires on the material level, then we won't fit in the spiritual world. We fit in the material world. Because that's where what we want. So to confront this in oneself, in myself, that the reason I'm here is because my consciousness is so polluted with so many material desires, and stop blaming everyone and everything else, and just accept my fallen condition, then in that mood we can chant Krishna's name. Because we can understand that we need help. So Advaita Charja followed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for some distance, and then Mahaprabhu finally turned to him with folded hands and said, "Please go back, pacify the devotees, pacify my mother. If you become agitated, no one will be able to continue to exist." Saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced the Advaita Charja and stopped him from following him further. How interesting how Mahaprabhu did that. An embrace brings someone closer, but it was a bringing of closer to say, "Now you have to go, I have to go alone." But the devotees in their separation and in the kirtan and the deities remained always with Mahaprabhu. And then Mahaprabhu, without anxiety, he proceeded to Jagannath Puri. That's where we'll stop. Oh no, there's two more verses in the chapter. The Lord with the other four persons went along the banks of the Ganges to the path of Chaturbhoga towards Nilajri Jagannath Puri. It's very important to listen to these last remaining verses. In his book known as Chaitanya Mangal, Vrindavan Das Thakur has elaborately described the Lord's passage to Jagannath Puri. And that will be the Leela Kirtan that we'll read tonight. The Lord travels until he enters the Jagannath temple. And then tomorrow we'll speak about what happens when he enters the Jagannath temple. If one hears the activities of the Lord in the house of Advaita Charja, he will certainly very soon, attain the riches of love for Krishna. So you've all heard. Very soon. Krishna Prema Dana. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy. I, Krishna, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps, very soon attain the riches of love for Krishna. Krishna Prema Dana. These are the real riches. One drop of those riches is enough to drown the world. But to get these riches, there is a very high price. And this price is everything. And we think in terms of giving everything to attain love for Krishna. Oh, but does that mean I can't have this and I'll lose this and I'll lose this and I'll lose that? Well, what thing do we have that we're afraid of losing that we're not destined to lose anyway by the unstoppable force of time. Name one thing that we fear losing, that we will not lose, whether we have love for Krishna or not. Name one thing. Therefore, Mahaprabhu says, Nadanam na janam na sundarim kubitam va jagadisha kamat mama janmani janmani sule. So we have spoke about today about the question. The journey. Is Mahaprabhu teachings on the journey. Now there's only about 2 more hours worth of class I have left on this topic, but I think we won't do that today. We'll leave that for some other time. Otherwise, Lux will test his austerity capacity too far. We don't want to do that. Any questions or comments? Thank you very much. You've been incredibly patient and tolerant and listening so carefully. Thank you. Oh. My leg has also been very patient until this moment when I just got impatient. Any questions or comments? Did they open the door? Yes. Attachment to Krishna, we call that the stage of a shakti. When there's attachment and we are not living in our relationship with Krishna, but you don't want anything else. You have no other attachment. You only want to be with Krishna. You're there, but not fully there. And the feeling of separation that comes from the stage of a shakti, you know who you are eternally in relationship with Krishna, but you're not living on that platform. That drives one, that empowers one's chanting, and it drives one to Bhava Bhakti and then Prema. That's the technical meaning of by attachment of Shakti, but actually one who has Prema is attached to Krishna. And that's what we want, because we have so many attachments. So many attachments. We want to pray to become attached to Krishna. And it's interesting to consider what stops us from becoming attached to Krishna. Ask yourself that question. What stops it? What stops attachment to Krishna from blossoming in the heart? Not that you should answer. We're not going to have everyone raise their hands and answer. It's very private kind of things. What am I attached to? Or what don't I have? I don't know enough about Krishna. I don't have enough faith. I don't know if it's real. I don't know if he's really going to take care of me. I'm attached to the beauties of this world. I'm attached to the pleasures of this world. Well, to see what it is and then move forward and see what it takes to move forward and take a step in that direction. That's the idea. Okay. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. You've all been so patient and so attentive. Thank you, Hare Krishna.